Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Swedish consumer credit company Klarna has grown from 1.5 million customers here in the UK in 2018 to over 18 million today. 2023 is seen as a bit of a litmus test for the buy now, pay later app. They do more than that, they like to remind us, giving rising interest rates and the cost of living crisis, of course. This as UK lawmakers are moving ahead with long-awaited plans to regulate the buy now, pay later part of the business that Klarna, Clearpay and others like PayPal operate as well. Let's bring in Klarna Chief Executive Sebastian Siemiatkowski, who is always a pleasure to talk to because he's always very frank and straightforward. And there's a lot going on, Sebastian. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. You made some product changes as well. The rates environment we can touch on, and of course, the impact of artificial intelligence already rippling through the markets today, certainly. Let's start with the top line, though, Sebastian. How's the business been doing in the first quarter of this year?
Well, actually, in our case, fairly well. Obviously, we do have seen a slowdown in growth in general, especially in online e-commerce. And UK is performing slightly worse than the other European countries. So you can see an even worsening situation in the UK. But in general, at the same point of time, you know, what we see is that the average order value is actually fairly similar, in our case, about £75, as it was, you know, before the crisis. So what it seems to be, people buying more cheaper items and less expensive items, but it ends up being the same basket value for a lot of those retailers. But definitely a slowdown in growth in general. And it's still, you see a very clear trend of return to physical stores and restaurants and kind of spending more there and less online, right? So you still have a little bit of that going on after, you know, COVID, kind of year-on-year comparisons are still a little bit COVID impacted.
Oh, so that evolution continues. Let's bring in Leanne Gerrans from Bloomberg Radio now as well, who has an ear to the ground on this subject matter as well. Leanne.
Seb, good morning to you. Seb, traders are now pricing in UK interest rates at 5.5%. How much does this hurt your business offering 0% short-term loans?
Well, it actually doesn't hurt it because, as you just said, like, I mean, that makes our offering to the consumers even more attractive, right? Because it is 0% interest and interest rates are going up. So it's the opposite. We see more interest in our product. Credit cards are, you know, becoming more expensive. They can cost 40, 50, 60% APR if you're unlucky, right? And so on the cost side, however, for us, you got to remember that we're not a credit card business. We're not about trying to build big balances. In general, outstanding balance on a credit card in the UK is £1,100. In our case, £75. And people pay it back within 3 months or 30 days. So we turn around the balance sheets almost 12 times a year. And so the interest rate cost for us is actually very, very small, a few percentages of our total cost base, because we can take that money and borrow it out again and again and again multiple times on the same year. So to us, it's actually almost like a benefit in the sense that we have a higher interest rate environment from that perspective. Oh, okay. Now, obviously, it's a little bit more expensive. I'm not going to say that it hasn't impacted at all, but it's actually marginal.
Is the product a loss leader then for you because there's a cost?
No. It's very profitable, actually, in the UK and in all the other markets. It's making a good gross margin. But the cost of the interest rate is a small piece of it. You know, it's more other costs associated, operational costs and so forth that are associated with this product. And remember, we only borrow out this money for a short period of time, right? It's about, you know, 30 days to 90 days. And hence, you can borrow at the same time, the same money multiple times. And hence, interest rate cost is actually very different if you borrow out mortgages or car loans or things like that.
Sebastian, the change in the product around this opt-out, you got a lot of headlines around it in the last 24 hours or so. So you're providing the option for your customers to opt out of the buy now, pay later tool that you have, of course, on the app. Talk to us about the rationale behind that. And is there a cost to the business for providing that and maybe giving the customers something that they need in this kind of more challenging environment?
Well, look, I think first and foremost, like we believe that there is, you know, that credit has a purpose to fill, that sometimes people need to use it for different reasons, why they're shopping online, they want to touch and feel the product before they pay for it, or they may be just out of salary and they need to buy something because they see a great discount that they need it and stuff. So there is a purpose to credit. The question is good forms of credit and bad forms of credit. In our case, a zero interest, low late fees, easy to use, low risk, pay back on installments. It's a better form of credit than traditional credit cards. You should watch Netflix credit cards explain. Sorry for making some competitive advertising here. But I think, it, you know, in 20 minutes sums up a lot of the bad practices the banks have applied in credit card space. So, but with that said, we are obviously still providing credit. And so we still have to be mindful. How do we underwrite? Our losses are 40% below credit card industry standards. So we think we do a pretty good job. But in this case, as you know, as our MP, Andrew Griffith, highlighted this idea that we should also allow people to opt out. You know, we all want to be a company that when we get a great idea and when it makes sense, we can act quickly, we can actually deliver on it and do it. And in this case, we urge all the banks and others to do the same because it exists in other industries. Credit is in general a good thing, but obviously, unfortunately, some people may overuse it or overextend themselves. How do we help them to put mechanism in place in order for them to control that? Just like you can do in other industries like gambling or whatever. And so I think this is a good thing. And I think more banks should follow and offer these kind of services.
So does this mean that you're getting ahead of regulation that could come in that the government is discussing at the moment, as you've just spoken to us, that you have been talking to Andrew Griffith?
Well, I think that you ahead of regulation, like, look, I think the challenge, what people forget with regulation in banking sector is that we've regulated in a bad way. We regulated about saying you have to ask these questions when you give somebody a loan. You have to do this and that. I mean, you are still probably suffering from the European Union's stupid decision of asking you to consent to cookies every time you go to a website. How has that increased privacy online? It doesn't work. These kind of prescriptive regulations are very poor. So what we're trying to always lead on and show is like, let's look at outcome-based regulation. For example, I think government here in this case should regulate and say, your losses cannot be higher than credit cards. That's a great. However, we manage to solve that. Because the benefit with that, the problem is when you do very prescriptive regulation says you can only do this and that, the problem is first, the less serious companies tends to find a way around it. So you usually over time don't accomplish what you want anyway. Mm. And then secondly to that, the bad thing about it creates less mobility in the market, meaning less competition. It becomes harder for consumers to switch. You don't want to go to a different bank because it's so much paperwork. That paperwork is partly there because of that regulation. And then that's why we see excess profits in this industry. That's why the banks have been making such an excess profit for so many years. That needs to end. That money needs to come back to the consumers, to society. And that will happen through more competition. So you have to find regulation that increases competition.
Yeah, no, and I understand the pitch, you know, the kind of the fintech, the innovative pitch that you're trying to make versus the kind of traditional players in this space. I suppose I will be challenging back to you, though, and say that these rules in some ways remind me a little bit of the limits on gambling websites. You know, the gambling industry has got these kind of voluntary agreements that basically means you can limit betting on various platforms. But we know that there are loads of workarounds that ultimately it does not work. This kind of voluntary industry sort of standard. So is your effort really going to reduce unsecured lending on your platform or across the industry? Is that actually the aim?
Yes. The aim is to make sure that we take responsibility for consumers. Most consumers are actually great payers. 99% of our customers pay on time. They don't overextend themselves. And they actually use our credit because it's a healthier form of credit. It's installments. It's fixed installments. They don't revolve. We don't offer revolving. We don't charge 60% interest rate. So most consumers use these products very responsibly. Can we find anything that can contribute to the people that for different reasons are not using their products in a responsible way? And I think, yes, this may be one. There are people that are aware that they have an issue, that they may overextend themselves, and they may want to create a little bit more friction. I think most of you, I at least have done it, on my social media apps, I've created this you know, limit on my phone, so I can't use it for more than an hour a day. And then it reminds me that I still have to say, I approve it. Like, it works for me. So I think this will work for some people as well, to help them have a little bit of extra friction on an individual basis to set that up for yourself. So yes,
okay,
yes,
well, we need to get you back in, Sebastian, in a couple of months' time to see if it is playing out as it is for your social media addiction or efforts to curb that addiction. On AI, look, I know you're focused on this topic, as many are. We're trying to cut through the hype, get to the real kind of real world implications of this. How significant are the trends that you're seeing as a result of what's been happening with large language models, generative AI, and specifically, what are you and Klarna doing around the underwriting and the use of AI in the underwriting part of the business?
Well, first and foremost, like, obviously you have to always be mindful of all the privacy and technology, you know, security aspects of this. I think also I would just quickly on like more societal level. One thing is that like, when I was starting to experience this with ChatGPT back in November and so forth, I leaned into this. I took contact with Sam Altman. I really wanted to learn. I've really nerded out on this. I've gone down very much in details. I've written my own LangChain, just to give you a sense for it. So I've been very much into the details. My belief is this is one of the biggest thing that's happened in a very long period of time. And I think everyone that I speak to on a senior level, tech leaders, are expressing fear and are worried. So I just want to make sure that that's very clear. And I'm also worried. I'm worried predominantly what's going to happen to jobs. I think a lot of jobs are going to become obsolete. And I think, you know, on the right side of the political spectrum, people will say, well, there will always be new jobs. That's happened before, industrial revolution, whatever. That's easy to say. But if you're a 55-year-old translator in Brussels, you know, you're not going to retrain and become a YouTube influencer. So I think that you have to look at it on an individual basis. And I think what is necessary from a political perspective is to offer people that may be affected some kind of solution, right? Some offering, some support. Because I think we are going to see a tremendous impact on job creation and jobs over the coming years due to this. So I think that's very important. For Klarna in particular, what I want us to do and what I've been, you know, encouraging the company to do, we have 14 ongoing AI initiatives internally. They range across a number of different initiatives. And what is the purpose is to learn, to go and not discuss on a hypothetical level, but actually go in, test, learn, iterate, and learn how to use it. And we see that there's some fantastic opportunities to take away work tasks that aren't that exciting, that have been fairly boring and time consuming, and allow people to focus on things that are more creative, more fun, and remove some of those work tasks. And so that's a fantastic opportunity for us.
Sebastian, does that actually mean job losses for you in the future then, if you're going down the route of AI?
Well, we have the benefit of being a growing company. Right. So in our case, what that means is we'll be able to continue growing, but not necessarily have to increase headcount. Right. So in our case, that is kind of resolving itself. But I do think, unfortunately, for companies that don't have that level of growth, it may be more challenging. Right. And so I do expect to see people, and I've already seen some companies start announcing that they have done changes due to AI taking over some jobs. So I just want to, I think people should, in my position, should be honest about this. I don't think we should, just stand and say, oh, you know, industrial revolution, whatever. I think we should be honest about it. This is going to have an impact on society. The important thing is that as a greater society, we have an answer for the people affected.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Okay, speaking of society then, in the last few weeks in the UK, there's been a lot of focus on, you know, the investability of Britain, whether there is a big plan for the UK, I mean, either from business leaders or from government or wherever. I wonder what your view is on the investment case now for the UK. I mean, we've stopped talking about Brexit. It really is about where Britain goes from here. How investable is the UK? You know, how interested are you at Klarna?
You know, when Brexit was about to happen, there used to be this old pop song you may remember, like, please don't go away, you know, like, whatever.
I do know that one.
To everyone in Britain, I was like, please don't go. And I wanted to do that. I'm like, gather all the Europeans I know. And I really miss you guys. Like, I really would love to keep you in this. But now the decision has been made and, you know, life moves on. I got to say, at the same point of time, I find Britain the most amazing entrepreneurial, ambitious, aspirational people that work in Britain are fantastic. We are going to continue to invest in Britain. There's such an amazing also finance sector with a lot of knowledge and deep understanding of banking services and retail banking. So at least from our perspective, like, I'm still very optimistic about it, but I obviously see the challenges that the country is currently facing, but you know, it's a fantastic island. I was very proud when I did my DNA heritage study and it turned out that I am 25 or 30% British or something like that. And I was like,
you spent your £100 on your DNA.
For you guys.
Seb, so much praise for us here in Britain. We love it. We loved your singing. But on a serious note, will you IPO here? I want to talk about fundraising. This is what we want to know all about. How are you going to raise money again? And is this IPO going to be right here in London?
Well, look, I'm not going to answer that question because we have no IPO for plans right now. But what I can say, I can't tell you exactly what, but we do have big plans to continue and increase our investments and increase our presence in the UK, because we still believe that London, as an example, is a global financial center, and we think it will continue to be so, and despite some of the bags, others' decisions and what they've done. So we're very optimistic. I think that the other thing you asked me about was
fundraising.
Oh yeah, no. So yes. The thing is that we back in May, when unfortunately we had to make a change to our headcount because investors told us that, like, you know, they didn't just listen to the story about the $1 trillion banking market opportunity that we were going for, and they actually wanted us to produce profit here and now as well. That, you know, unfortunately, you know, put us in the tough spot that we had to make the changes that were, you know, very, very demanding and sad to see some of our great colleagues had to leave. And we had to change the setup. But already then we announced that we were going to come back to profitability. We've been a profitable company for our first 16 years of existence, and we are now very good on that trend. We still are committed to being profitable on a month-by-month basis again around summer. We haven't been very specific with what summer means, so that gives us a little bit of room for maneuver. But in general, like, that's trending really well. So, and that will then allow us to not have to raise more money going forward, right? So that's the plan currently.
Yeah, absolutely. Summer can mean many things. Just lastly then, just returning to that idea of kind of the strength of the UK consumer and delinquency rates at Klarna. I mean, you're still positive on how that's going. How does the UK compare to other European countries that you're operating in?
Well, actually, I wish I could answer that question. I think I am not necessarily well placed to do it, because to some degree, again, because of the very short durations of our loans, right? Again, so that's a very different thing. If you're a big bank, you know, you change your underwriting because there's a macroeconomical worsening right now. It takes you about 2 years before your balance sheet is underwritten according to the new standards. So it takes a long time to improve you know, the setting and who you've underwritten and what risk you've been taking. In Klarna's case, because we have so short durations, when we change our underwriting, it takes only 2 months for half of the balance sheet to be underwritten according to the new standard. So we're a very agile bank. We have a huge ability to quickly adapt to a new macroeconomic environment. And that's what we did. We did it already with our slightly low, because we do have a little bit of longer credit that's about 12 to 24 months. We started with that already more than 1 year ago, about 1.5 years ago. And then for the short-term credit, we did that about a year ago. So we, in the UK, we've seen a tremendous improvement in losses, as we've seen in other European countries. And to be honest, we don't see that UK is currently performing worse from a loss perspective. But I'm not entirely sure that my data is kind of, you know, accurately describing the overall impact on the economy. And so, you know, take it with a pinch of salt.
I will. Listen, Sebastian, just to sort of, you know, you've painted quite a positive picture, I think, of the situation for the business right now. But actually, the global backdrop is pretty gloomy. I mean, Germany, we just learned, went into recession at the end of last year. There are worries around recession for the US, for the UK, rising interest rates. I mean, the drumbeat of kind of even conflict between the US and China, etc. Like, the backdrop is quite bad. What do you see as the biggest risk to your business? What's the thing that keeps you up at night?
Well, first, I've been fortunate, and maybe that's why I've endured being 18 years as an entrepreneur, is that I always sleep. Like, I've never had problems with sleeping. So, that, you know, I just fall asleep. I can do that pretty much everywhere, by the way. But the point is that, like, so I'm not falling. But to me, it is like this, right? There's things that I can control, and there are things that I cannot control. And that's the first thing. And then second to that, when it became very obvious for us already back in April, May last year, that there was going to be a major shift, that we saw, you know, most, for example, fintech companies that were publicly traded dropped 90% in valuations. And I understood that this was going to be a massive shift in sentiment in the market and stuff like that. To me, once you've come to the conclusion that that's the case, and it's just not like noise or just, you know, some short shift, I think as a CEO and as a leader of a company, your duty is to not put your head in the sand, but actually go and act and make the changes. And to some degree, you know, interestingly, we were so early in taking decisions and make adjustments that at some point of time, media at that point of time speculated that it was Klarna specific. If we would have made those changes 3 to 6 months later, everyone was like, yeah, it's like everyone else. But to us, it was important to act and be, you know, be willing to act and take tough and very hard and empathetically very difficult decisions and to adjust. And I think if you do that at the same point of time, we have a very solid underlying, you know, profitable business. We generate over $1 billion of gross profit in the European markets. So it's not like, you know, we don't know how to make money. We know how to make money. We've made money before. So we had to now change and adjust again. But I think that's the important thing. The things that I cannot control, I don't worry about them because they are what they are, right? I can obviously be interested and I follow them, but I have to focus on what I can actually do. And I think we've taken the actions to, you know, prepare ourselves for a tougher economical environment. And I think we're fairly well prepared now. We're better prepared than maybe some companies that we're slow in adopting and changing to that.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.